You're tuned to Northfolk Works, and I'm Hazel Kahn. Today my guest is Mary Foster Morgan. She's my neighbor, as almost everybody who comes to Northfolk Works is. That's the joy of Northfolk Works. And Mary is involved in something that we should all be involved in, and that's food waste. We are all involved in food waste because we all waste food. But Mary is one of the people who's doing something about it. Mary, before we start, just give a little bit of background about where you live now on the North Fork and how you came to be here, and a little bit about your background and the environmental activism that you're involved with right now.
Sure. I live in Orient, beautiful Orient. Look across Long Island Sound and see beautiful Connecticut. I grew up in a family of locavores. Before the word was known, both grandparents had gardens. My East Hampton grandparents had a farm. My grandmother loved to go to farm stands and get fresh fish. Her son was a fisherman. He'd drop off clams or beautiful fish, and she would cook it with a very light touch, which I've learned is how you cook fish, the most delicious way. My father's family grew up in Western New York, and he loved to go to farm stands too. Part of his family, I guess, has done it. He also had gardens. And he would come home from work and say, "Come on, kids, I found a new farm stand. Let's all go. I just learned that they have the most delicious corn, or the best peaches, or the most delicious strawberries, or the most wonderful melon," and we would pile on the car and go to yet another new farm stand.
So that's how you grew up?
That's how I grew up, and that's what I assumed how everyone lived, you know, shop at farm stands first. When I came out to Eastern Long Island from Manhattan, I was looking around, what happened to the farm stands? This was now the 90s. There weren't any farmers markets, very few farm stands. There were no CSAs. There was no winter's market. There was no East End Food Institute. And my husband-to-be and Kate Plum, who now runs two farmers markets, and Ted Conklin, proprietor of the American Hotel, we proceeded to start the first chapter, East End chapter of Slow Food, which has grown to be one of the largest chapters in the country. So you can see there's a huge interest in local food.
What is slow food?
Slow food is the opposite of fast food. It was started in Rome by a man named Carlo Petrini, who was very upset about McDonald's coming to Rome and the Spanish Steps. And he said, "Rome is not about fast food. We love our bread, we love our cheese, we love our wine, we love our produce, we love our fish. Rome is about slow food." And so he really launched a whole slow food effort around the world.
I've heard criticisms of slow food. I'm sure you have too. I've heard that somehow there's an elitist thing to slow food, that you have to be able to afford slow food. I don't know whether that means that's because fast food is cheaper or if there's some other thing going on with that.
Well, I will say when I was very involved with starting it, we had that criticism. And the way our little group faced that criticism is we had potlucks, free potlucks. I invited anybody who wanted to come and bring a dish. So the whole idea for us was about encouraging local food.
So that's what a locavore is.
The word locavore was coined by a California chef, meaning sourcing your food within 100 miles.
Okay.
It's the way my husband and I live. We shop farm stands first.
But there's no farm stands in the winter, or are there?
There's CSAs, there's farmers markets, there's the Riverhead East End Food Institute market. If you look around, there's markets.
Even when it's indoors, it's still a farm stand,
right.
In other words. So the East End Food Institute, that's the same thing as the farmers market in Riverhead?
They are growing to be a huge enterprise and very important for our farming community and all of us who love local food. They have established a farmers market, a winter market in Riverhead. You know, Hazel, I wanted to mention, we on the East End of Long Island have a proud history of supporting our farming community and open spaces. In 1974, we were the first county in the nation to have a purchase of development rights program. The idea was the taxpayers' dollars, county money, would go to purchase the development rights from farmers who want to sell their development rights but not their farmland. So we protected thousands of acres of farmland. Yeah.
And continue
to do so. Every so many years, voters vote again for it. And it's opened up a lot of farming to young farmers. small farmers, that about a third of our farms are under 9 acres. Another third are between 10 and 50 acres. And then another third are over 50 acres. So we have a kaleidoscope, really, of farms and attracting young farmers all the time.
What are you actually working on now? I saw your article in Eastern Beacon. Mm-hmm. So talk about that.
I write a column called Climate Local Now, and I'm concerned about climate change and the climate crisis, and a big follower of, inspired by Paul Hawken, who's written a book called Drawdown, where he calculated the many solutions to reverse global warming. He decided to call the book Drawdown because the goal was to start drawing down the harm that we're sending up, the carbon emissions. Stop sending it up and start drawing it down. You stop sending it up by not using fossil fuel, alternative fuels, and you start drawing it down by planting trees. Compost draws down carbon in the soil. And he calculated 100 solutions. Number 3 really wowed me, which is reducing food waste. And being a foodie, I said, I want to know more about that one.
I remember when I first heard about this, that one of the solutions was girls and women.
Women and girls, yes.
Women and girls.
Climate
issue. I interconnected it to food waste because girls and women are the ones who are in charge of the kitchen, the food. So that's how, to me, the two were linked.
Yes, that's a good link. I like that link.
Yeah.
He didn't link the two things in the book. He really has separate 100 solutions. And what I got from the book was, well, first, that there are solutions and they're ranked. And also, there's pilot programs going on all over the country, all over the world, that need to be brought to scale. So that was the 3 most eye-opening things for me in reading this book, is what the solutions are, the ranking of the solutions, and creating a pilot program.
So you believe that there are solutions?
It's more than a belief. It's a scientific fact. You know, if we could scale up all the solutions that are stopping sending emissions up and starting drawing emissions down, we would be able to reach drawdown by 2050.
When I was reading your article, I said to myself, I never thought I'd be doing a show about eating leftovers. But, you know, here we are. So tell our listeners about that fourth grader in Ohio.
7 people sent me an article from the New York Times. I think the title was How We Got Ohioans to Eat Their Leftovers. After the 7th person sent it to me, I said, I've got to really look at why this is attracting so many people. And so I basically repeated the story in my article.
Well, repeat it for our listeners.
Mother reaches back into her fridge to find a leftover dinner, and she pulls it out, and I think it's green pepper, and she's like, ugh, and starts to toss it into the trash. Her 10-year-old daughter is watching, who had just learned food waste is a big climate problem. It's causing 8% of our greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. That's twice that of aviation. We have people who are going hungry in this country. I think the number is 40 million. There are solutions to food waste. And when we dump our food into the trash and send it to the landfill, we're just part of the problem. And the little girl bursts into tears. That was the first paragraph. That's what has caught people's attention. And that family was dedicated. The mother immediately decided, we're going to do better. We're going to do better.
The girl was crying because she was upset because she saw it actually happening right in her.
She saw it happening right in her own kitchen, and her own family was part of the problem.
Following on some of, I think, the language in your article, you talk about that you and your team have found a way to divert food waste to compost. You've mentioned to me that people want to know how to do composting. They already know what it is. They just don't know how to do it. There's something noble and grand and virtuous about composting. Universals now. Everybody has leftovers, except very, very poor and very starving people. They don't have leftovers. Everybody has guilt and frustration about throwing food away. We all do it, but we all feel bad about it. And then I thought the other thing that everybody maybe has in common is vowing to do better in the future about composting leftovers. Somehow what you are doing is you're connecting these different components, including the guilt, you know. So thinking of food scraps, there's a whole realignment also is necessary. And I'm doing all of this, talking about these things this way, because you've done these things, but you may not have realized how well you've done them. So that, for instance, instead of thinking of food scraps as garbage, you start thinking of it as compost. you also then start thinking of food scraps as not being necessary. You don't have to have that many food scraps. So somehow all of these things, your program is retraining people to have a very different feeling about all these different aspects of their own personal food chain. I think people are beginning to realize that there's no such thing as throwing things away. There is no more away.
Our landfills on Long Island are closing in 2024. So there's no away. And as my grandmother would say, it's not waste until you throw it away. There's no waste until you make it waste. that's the Yankee thrift. But part of the article, what I wanted to do is get people's attention with the 10-year-old, but then also give a roundup of what's going on already on Eastern Long Island to give people the idea that it can be easy if they bring it into their lives to reduce their food waste and use any scraps as compost. In Hampton Bays, there is a CSA, a community-based agricultural compost effort, where if you're within the vicinity of Hampton Bays, you pay a certain amount, I think it's $40,
at the
Ecological Culture Institute, and they have a garden donated to them called Good Grounds Garden. The idea of community composting is it's done in a locale. So within the locale of Hampton Bays, you can pay $40 to join their community compost effort. You get a bucket, you get the instructions, and you bring your food scraps to the Good Grounds compost.
So you give them your leftovers.
In the bucket, according to their instructions. Or you can pay a little extra for pickup service. The same thing is happening in Bridgeport with Park City Compost. I don't think you pay. I think Bridgeport is contributing to the not-for-profit so that it's a free service, but I'm not sure about that.
So then what do I as the householder, what do I get out there? I just get rid of my leftovers,
well,
or do I get the compost?
There's different ways it's being set up in different communities. With Ecological Cultural Institute, you can volunteer and be part of the composting effort at the garden, and you can also, at the end of your term, your $40 season, you get a bucket of compost for your garden.
How big is the bucket?
I'm not sure. I think it's probably a 3-gallon bucket, something like that. Yeah. I think if you volunteer, you can get more compost. Part of it is I think you belong. You pay. You pay to be participating.
Like a membership.
Yes, like a membership. On Shelter Island, Sylvester Manor has a CSA, Community Supported Agricultural Program, and there participants are allowed to bring food scraps, according again to their requirements, back to the farm where the farm puts it in their compost site. It's another way that it's happening.
So the householder there would just be able to find a place to take it. They don't get anything back.
I'm not sure, again.
They might also be evolving as they finesse their own programs.
And my Drawdown friends, we had put together a pilot program for the town of Southold. Mark Hobner, who is the president of the North Fork Environmental Council, and Sherry Thulby, who is a Drawdown devotee like I am and an activist, we had gotten together because we all live on the North Fork and said we want to bring one of Paul Hawkins' solutions to the North Fork in a way that we start with a pilot program and scale it up. And all of us were mesmerized by the fact that reducing food waste was number 3. And when you combine that with composting was solution number 60, the loop was completed, the resource loop. And it was such a positive thing for our community that we said, let's focus on that. So we designed a program where 30 families would participate for 30 days.
In Southold.
We would give each family a bucket. We would give them the directions. Instead of putting their food into the yellow bag that goes to the transfer station, they would divert their food from the yellow bag and put it into the bucket. When they brought their yellow bag to our transfer station, they would bring the bucket and put it in another place on the same premise. We'd met with the manager of our solid waste stream, and we had gotten permission, and he said, I'm happy to do this for 30 days. You guys are managing it. He didn't want us to put the food scraps in his leaf compost area.
Uh-huh.
Mary Foster Morgan is talking about food waste and composting on the North Fork. This is Hazel Kahn and North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
Our idea was to demonstrate that people wanted to do this and that they would be compliant. They would agree to all the rules. So we said, fine, we'll find a farm. Treber Farm in Southold was willing to take the food scraps for 30 days. We ran the program. Mark, Sherry, and I, every day at 4:30 before the transfer station closed, picked up the buckets, brought them to Treber Farm, dumped them into the compost, weighed them, dumped them into the compost, and put clean buckets back at the transfer so people could pick up clean buckets. And what we found out was that exactly with the national average, our 30 families were wasting a half a pound of food per person a day. When we did the 30-day analysis, we found that 1,000 pounds that we had added up calculated to a half a pound per person of food waste a day, which is the national average. So we were diverting all of that waste from our waste stream for 30 days. We were diverting or not sending up greenhouse gases that would have amounted to a ton.
Because it was becoming compost instead.
Yeah, because it was becoming compost instead. And my favorite comment from the families was, when I saw and realized how much food I was wasting, I made a pledge to waste less.
It's a thing that surprises me. The reward, the benefit, is deferred. That is, by doing this, you're helping climate change, as opposed to by doing this, you're actually helping your family's budget.
In the article, I mentioned that typically a family wastes about $1,200 a year, draw down, save emissions, but save money. Well, I can tell you another woman who's inspired me on exactly that topic. She's a sailor, Ellen MacArthur, broke the world record for the fastest solo sailor around the world, and realizing that everything on her boat could be used. There's no waste. And she has three premises that I think food waste fits beautifully into. One is by not wasting food, doing something else with it, you're eliminating the waste and the pollution. And then you circulate the resources within the community. So when you make compost, you're circulating all those organic resources back into the community. And the third piece is you regenerate nature. The three tenets of her circular economy, when you don't think of anything as waste, you use it as a resource, and you're going to do something resourceful with it and make it into compost.
Right.
It helps build soil structure. And for us on the east end of Long Island, it helps our soils retain water, it lowers stormwater runoff, and it helps fill our aquifer because compost helps water permeate through the soil. We've built a system where we pay to send waste away, as you pointed out. So not only have the carbon emissions been lowered, but the cost of sending waste away has been lowered. We've kept the organic resource in our community to use for our farms and our gardens. Think about all of our organic resources as resources and to keep them here and use them.
There is something going on in Riverhead as well.
Yes, Mark Hobner, who was part of the Southhold 30 Family 30-Day Pilot, is now on a committee in Riverhead, using the Southhold Pilot as the base to expand it in Riverhead and involve the town of Riverhead and the transfer station there. Again, a neighborhood pilot. They use the same buckets that we had gotten for the Southhold Pilot. Slow Food East End had supplied the buckets. Mark involved two farms and two restaurants and the households, and I think it's a three-month program. They just completed it. Again, the analysis was people are wasting a half a pound of food a day, but they were delighted, as the people in Southhold were, to have an answer to their food scraps. So where can we send our food scraps or take our food scraps where it's going to do some good? Particularly the restaurants were very, very happy to be able to scrape the plates into a bucket. Households are about 70% of the food waste in the waste stream. Restaurants are much less.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the Repair Cafe, which is also part of, I'll explain it as I understand it, just people instead of throwing away things that are ripped or broken, a teapot where the handles come off, or socks that need darning or whatever, that those things can be repaired, or an appliance can be repaired. So the idea of the Repair Cafe, which I know has also been part of what you and Mark have been doing, certainly Mark's been doing, and that's a worldwide thing now, I believe, certainly US-wide.
Yeah, I think it's a trend. Yeah, like composting is a trend.
Right.
It's an effort of the North Fork Environmental Council, and with which Mark heads. I've been to the Repair Cafe. Mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful project. They're having two this spring, one in Greenport and one in Riverhead.
Yeah.
And I've brought shovels to be sharpened and scissors to be sharpened and things to be repaired.
Yeah, so the idea of reuse and, you know, reclaiming them rather than sending to the dump. I'm just wondering if you're seeing, or if you believe that there is an overall, let's call it new value system, so that doing it for food and doing it for repair might also mean that you're doing it for other things, that it becomes a more of a broader way of life that encompasses all aspects of our lives, because in the end we all have to do with less, because overall we're just making too much, using too much, throwing away too much. I'm just wondering if you're seeing a transfer of these things from the food waste to other kinds of things.
Well, you mentioned it, you thought of it as a new lifestyle or a new ethic, and I would argue that it's an age-old ethic.
Yeah.
My grandmother would say, it's not waste until you waste it.
Yeah.
And that's the way we lived. I mean, my grandfather had a string drawer, and I don't think of this as a Depression era kind of concept. I think of it as Yankee thrift.
Right.
You know, it's really being ingenious and using everything like Ellen MacArthur did on her sailboat.
But are you seeing that returning now? If it's not new, is there a resurgence of it?
I may not be the best person to answer that, because I've never not seen it. I mean, that's the way I've lived my life from my childhood. As I said, Yankee thrift, and you use everything. I love making soup out of the leftovers from the carrot tops. And do you remember the story of stone soup, where the community gets together to make a soup and all they've got is a stone? So they put this big pot and they fill it with water and they put the stone in the pot. And one family shows up with carrots, and another shows up with potatoes, another shows up with celery, another shows up with maybe some meat, and the whole community comes together and makes stone soup. I remember that as a child. I thought it was a charming story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved making stocks, and we have lots of stock in our freezer that we use for sauces and risotto, and that's just the way we live. Everything's a resource.
But you coming from a more, say, let's call it enlightened background, just wondering.
Farming.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering if you're seeing that spread, that idea spread, that people are connecting, that it's not just the
I'm food. Seeing it more in the headlines of articles, actually. Mm-hmm. I am seeing it. And, for myself, what I'm trying to do is write the Climate Local Now article and learn more about the many ways we can all lower our greenhouse gases and sequester them in safely in soils and trees. But also, I'm part of a community engagement effort to the many ways we can all live a lifestyle where we all thrive, but we're also using our resources. We're not seeing this as a waste. We're not seeing it as depriving ourselves.
No.
It's a resource that can be circulated back into the community.
I'm just wondering if Paul Hawken would now gonna have to rethink or maybe recombine certain things into other things,
right,
to be more relevant, because his book was written.
No, it's true. And he wrote a second book. He said this is the book Drawdown was about the solutions.
Right.
And his next book, which is also a bestseller called Regeneration, mm-hmm. is about how to do it. And there is a website. If you go to regeneration.org, there's a website where people are discussing all the many ways to do exactly what you're talking about, Hazel,
okay.
How to make create this kind of circular concept where we all thrive, our economy thrives, if we use our resources wisely.
Yeah, because waste is always everywhere. We've got to transform waste into resources.
Or not even think of it as waste from the beginning.
Change the language. I'm a great believer that when you change the language, you change the thinking. It's not exactly an original thought, but I think we should end in a minute. But somewhere you say in your article that you think of households as low hanging fruit. Why do you say that? Is it just
that
is
something
unit or
actually that's something the Department of DEC, New York State DEC representative said to us, that food waste for towns is the low hanging fruit in lowering your greenhouse emissions, because households generate 70% of the food waste in the solid waste stream. We, the households, are the big generator of food waste. So we can do a lot. with lowering what actually goes into the waste stream. If we lower what actually goes into the waste stream, we're lowering our greenhouse gases. So that's why it's the low-hanging. It's the easiest thing for us to focus on.
Because there's more of it. I mean, there's more data points in the
number three universe. It's climate solution number three, according to Drawdown. And just sort of to end, my ending for our conversation, I guess, is that a little story that I like to tell. It's when we were doing a rally for Drawdown early on, a young woman approached me. She's from a senior in high school. And the first thing she said is, "Thank you for caring." And I was really, I almost cried, because I thought, young people think we don't care. If we don't talk about climate solutions and make an effort in our lives to focus on it and lower our emissions and pull down carbon and find ways to do it, they think we don't care. And we all do care. We're just afraid to talk about it. So I was, of course, I gave her the microphone. I said, "Please talk to the audience, because we want to hear from you. You're in high school. We want to hear from your generation." But it really stuck with me, her "thank you for caring."
Mm-hmm. What are your plans, your organization? What is your actual organization? Is it Climate Drawdown?
We don't have an organization, really.
So for now that we're going to end, for the next foreseeable future, whether it's Drawdown or whether it's
Climate Local Now,
for either of those two affiliations of yours, let's put it that way, do you have any particularly new plans? Are you going to be doing anything differently?
My intention for the next while is to keep writing the Climate Local Now column, focusing on local solutions. Mark Hobner and I switch off writing it. I'm also involved with a community engagement effort to involve people in the many ways we can compost on the East End of Long Island.
And what is that? Is that Drawdown East End, or is that something else?
It's really an offshoot, I guess you could say, of our science group, that we see the value in it. And so we want to encourage it.
And your science group is Drawdown East End?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the science group is Drawdown
There's
East End.
There's all these things, and for people listening and who have not heard you or read your work or heard of Mark, I just want to make sure they all understand.
No, it's complicated.
Yeah. So thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mary Foster Morgan. Thanks for coming all the way from the far east of our town. I look forward to continuing to make sure that I know what you're up to and what you all are working on, and new directions and how you yourself, I guess, modify or modulate what you do because of the way everything is changing all the time. We've got to keep adapting to the new inputs, because inputs become outputs, That's my little phrase. But thank you very much indeed for coming, and I hope that you will share this story that we've just recorded with your network, so they can hear it a second time, because all of these things need to be repeated. They can all do with being repeated over and over again.
Thank you, Hazel. It's a pleasure.
Good. Nice to have met you finally, too. Thanks very much, Mary.
You've been listening to Mary Foster Morgan talking about food waste and composting on the North Fork. You can hear North Fork Works on the first Wednesday of the month at this time and any time at all as podcasts on hazelkahn.com. To support my programs, Tidings and North Fork Works, and all WPKN's terrific interview programs, please consider making a donation at wpkn.org. Thank you. I'm Hazel Kahn.